Hello, fellow Egypts. Welcome to Taranoia. Taranoia, a really special brand, a really dark brand of my own special fears and insecurities. But we all have them, but we're all Egypts, but we're all doing our best. Now, as usual, I only really bring non-Egypts into the big studio. Stop laughing at me. She knows my Egyptry, so she knows I'm a... I can't even pretend she's not an Egypt for a second, says Dara. Listen, please put your hands together at home, like I always ask you to do, for the incredible activist, writer, blogger, and soon-to-be politician, Evie Nevin. Yay! So thank you so much for coming, Evie.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted. I'm so excited.
It's very exciting to have you in Dublin because, of course, you live in West Cork.
I do. Fellow West Corker.
Fellow West Corker. Well, I always get told I'm an imposter because I'm from Kinsale. And then I have to go, well, I am from Kinsale, but all my extended family was from way out west.
Way west.
Yeah. So like Durrus, Kista, all those kind of little tiny places.
Yeah.
So are you a native West Corker?
No, actually, I grew up in Ballincollig.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
See, near almost the city. A city girl.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be part of the city now soon.
Yeah.
Moved to Clann when I was 17 and been kind of there pretty much ever since. Did a stint up in Dublin for college and stuff. But I kind of got over Dublin fairly lightly.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Oh, these are harsh words straight off the bat. Usually we try to couch them in some way. I don't have any anti-Dublin sentiment, but I do like to ease into any sort of Dublin-Cork rivalry. But no, you're straight in. You're straight in. But there again, you never mince your words. So that's one of the reasons that I really wanted to have you in. Because I became aware of your work over repeal, repeal campaign. But you were raising awareness for a very specific group, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we started off as Disabled People for Choice, kind of like September 2017. And I kind of started doing that because people with disabilities were being talked about rather than being talked to. So there were, during the campaign, there was an awful lot of eugenics talk. They were, well, if it's going to be legalised, you won't be here anymore, and the likes of you, and all this kind of crack. And
the likes of you, Evie.
The likes of me, yeah.
So, because of course, you live with a disability.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. And so do my two children.
They inherited
the condition of all the things to inherit. Like, I mean, they both of them are the image of their father, but then they get my wonderful genes.
They are wonderful genes, but it must be. Well, exhausting is the word that's coming into
it
my head.
Yeah, totally. But the reason why it's exhausting is trying to get the expertise and trying lobbying the government to give us one single consultant, which they won't do. It's super irritating.
What do you mean, one consultant in terms of geography or...?
Like, just one consultant for the country. There is nobody here in Ireland who has the expertise that we can go to for all the different... Here, it's very focused on the joint issue of the condition. So, like, my joints dislocate very, very easily.
Would you mind describing people?
Oh,
people,
yeah,
the
sure.
Just in case they haven't heard
your
story.
The condition I have is Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. It's a connective tissue disorder. So, let's say your collagen is like household glue. Whereas
I have very little of that left in you, I know.
I don't know.
But go on.
So your collagen would be like household glue, whereas mine would be like chewing gum. So like my joints, my ligaments, my organs, everything, they're all very stretchy, my skin and everything, and it's like pulls out. And there is nobody here in the country that is an expert in it, and we've been lobbying the government. Well, I've been lobbying the government for the last 5 years to give us just one consultant, because we have to travel to London for the expertise. But the government are like, no, all our rheumatologists are well able to look after you. And it's like, well, my experience, no, they're not. Like, but it's not even that. It's a huge, it affects almost every single part of the body. So we need cardiologists, neurologists, gastro people. You know what I mean? It's like, we need a multidisciplinary team here in Ireland. But at the moment, we're just asking for one consultant to kind of overlook everybody. But no, they're like, nah, you're grand. There's only 300 of us so far diagnosed in the country, but so we don't really matter, do we? Do you know?
Oh, this is terrible. Like, and I always, it's something that I kind of, this must be very frustrating when you live with a disability, especially something, you know, that is chronic and exhausting and all mm-hmm. of that. Is that like people like me who don't live with a disability, we take our ability, our mobility for granted. Mm-hmm. And so it's very easy to not think about accessibility yeah. or anything like that. And do you ever want to give able-bodied people a shake? I want to give myself a shake, so I don't understand if you do.
It's just about kind of awareness. And the thing is that what people don't realise, and they like kind of looking past their own situations, is that disability doesn't discriminate. It can happen to anyone mm. at any time.
Yeah.
Like whether it's an illness or an accident or whatever. Like I wasn't always in the condition I'm in now. Mm. It wasn't until I hit puberty, really. And that's kind of generally when things go haywire for girls. That the pain starts and the fatigue and all the various other things. So even for me, it wasn't until I started losing my mobility and all this kind of stuff that I started understanding it. And then for a long time, then I was kind of going, well, what can I do? Do you know, I haven't lived with this for very long, or so I thought, you know, but it was actually from when I was a baby that like my parents then afterwards were like, oh no, yeah, it kind of makes sense now because you had this wrong and this wrong and this wrong as a baby.
And of course, they wouldn't have anyone to ask.
No, like there was a conference here in Ireland. We invited experts over from the UK to give a talk here. And my dad came along with me and he was like, how did we not know? I was like, Dad, the people who are, you know, working in the hospitals don't know. How are yeah. you supposed to know? You know, so... yeah, it's incredibly frustrating. I think the awareness is getting better about disability issues, but there's still a long, long way to go.
And that's what I find incredible about you is you're really raising awareness about your own situation, using your own life, which is incredibly hard thing to do, using your own life to raise awareness and create visibility. But you're advocating for all kinds of other issues too.
Mm-hmm.
Disability yeah. in general, I suppose you can't really generalize about it. There's so many
different kinds. Yeah.
But at the same time, it is about making people aware because there's something I think in people, they don't want to think about it because it possibly is so possible for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if it's not facing them, do you think there's something in that that they maybe don't want to think about it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it makes people uncomfortable as well, I think. I mean, there's days where I'm like walking in here and I've got my cane and I'm fine. Whereas there's another day I'm in my wheelchair. People don't understand that and they get really, really uncomfortable seeing me in my wheelchair. It's really funny. But we kind of like make light of it as well. Like my husband gets great kick out of people kind of looking at me and stuff. And if I stand up out of my chair to like reach for something, he's like, oh, it's a miracle.
Oh, you feckin' divils. That yeah. is so mean. You're rotten.
And I'm like, oh God. You know, this kind of thing. So like, if you don't laugh at it, I think sometimes you just kind of like fall into despair, you know.
I mean, that's a great attitude, but by the same token, it's a rotten hand to be dealt.
It is. And it took me a very, very, very long time to deal with it. And I think it's only really this year that I go, right, this is the hand I'm dealt. What can I do about it? And do you know what? So many people said after repeal, God, I'm exhausted. And whereas I was like, no, let's go. There's so much more to do, you know. And if someone said to me 2 years ago that I'd be doing all this stuff, like standing up in front of thousands of people at the March for Choice and running for election and all this kind of crack, yeah, I would have laughed.
Wait, whoa. Back up. Because you're going to the, Evie, you're going to the dark side. You're becoming a politician.
Yeah, I know.
Stay with us in the grassroots world.
I know, but that's the thing. Like, we need like people that are kind of passionate about these issues. That are not evil, exactly. And who actually want change. Because that's the thing, like with repeal, it did create a lot of people who want to get into politics. and a lot of young people. And I think that's what we need to do.
And I'm delighted for them. And I'm also delighted to wave at them as they trot down the evil road. No, I know, you're completely right. And I think it's an incredible thing to do to enter party politics. And you're with
the Social Democrats.
So that's, they're an exciting new party. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what you all do.
And the majority of us are women as well, which is really exciting.
Whoa!
Yeah, like 60% of the candidates are women.
It seems that it is quite representative of people of quite different backgrounds. So people from different socioeconomic classes.
Yeah.
And from people from different race backgrounds and lots of gender.
Mm-hmm.
Good representation for women. So is that what drew you to them?
Very much so. That it was majority women, which was, it wasn't any boys club, if you know what I mean, which is always good, I think.
Don't know what you mean.
And the first time I kind of became aware of the Soc Dems was actually during the campaign to repeal. And I met one of the co-party leaders, Catherine Murphy, who's a TD in Kildare. And we were both speaking at an event in Kildare. And she came up to me afterwards and she was asking me about my condition. And she was like, what can we do here in Ireland to help people like you with this condition? Like, working as a journalist for years, I came across so many politicians. She was the first one to ask me, what can we do?
Wow.
So I was like, right, okay. And then I was looking at, the policies with disability and housing and health and childcare and everything. And I was like, I can see why so many women are drawn to the party. And it was everything I would have stood for if I was running as an independent. So that's kind of what kind of drew me to them. Like, and they're great crack. They're so, and they're sound, like so sound.
I think there's really something in, the older I get, the more crack someone is, usually the more broad and open they are. The people tend to have a good sense of humour, who have an open view of the world and are a bit more inclusive. Now, it's broad generalisation, but I think that's a really good point, that you have to be having the crack when you're...
Oh yeah, because I think like if you... kind of go down the road of being too serious, it's not fun. Like, and I want this to be kind of a fun experience as well, and to make it fun for the people who are campaigning with me as well. Like, I roped my dad in as my campaign manager as well. And
oh my God.
Yeah.
A man, a West Cork man with a new party. This is, because I just remember that there are lots of old loyalties in Cork. What's it like being in a new party there?
There isn't actually that much awareness of the party, I suppose, because it's still a new party and we're kind of down in an area where there's hardcore Sinn Féin, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, again, through the campaigns that we've had in the last few years with same-sex marriage and repeal, that a lot of younger people are getting interested in politics and looking at different parties that aren't the standard. My dad's a Brit actually as well, so
Jesus, yeah. Stacking it all against yourself.
Well, he's been here, to be fair, he's been here since the 70s, and his mother was Irish as well, so I never grew up with a family that talked about politics or was involved in politics or anything like that. So I didn't come from sort of any family dynasty of politicians or anything, which a lot of people would be down Cork.
Very much so. That's kind of what I was referring to. And it's quite entrenched, to the point that it's something my dad was from Clare, so already like a way outsider in those terms, way outside. Like, so your dad being from Britain, which I can really understand how that would carry a lot of suspicion. It's sort of like, are you from the next town land? We're a bit suspicious. That
you can blow,
be
blowing,
you're
yeah,
blowing, and you're
yeah,
blowing
yeah,
forever.
Yeah,
So it's, I suppose we were taught, don't ever mention your politics at all, no matter what they turn out to be. Don't even tell me what they are. Like, don't sort of don't mention them. So it is. It's quite a thing to come with a new party and go, boom, here I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Alan McGuire.
I'm Sarah Griffin.
And I'm Alan Tom.
And we are the three hosts of Juvenalia, a podcast where we talk to interesting people about the bits of pop culture that were important to them when they were young.
We've talked to Sarah Quinn about Madonna.
We've talked to Auntie Donahue about Star Wars.
And we've talked to Sinead Burke about Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
And that's just three of the 60 plus episodes we have on the Heads Up Podcast Network. So if you remember things from your childhood and want to talk about them, we're here.
It's deep chats with sound people about wonderful things from their childhood.
That's what we do here. So give us a listen. Bye, everybody.
See you now.
Bye.
But what are you doing? Cause, you know, you've already got this condition that presents extra challenges in your day. You're a mom. Mm. But you're going, no, activism and politics and where are you going to get the rest?
Yeah.
Evie, had you factored this in at all?
I have. I've become very good at pacing and doing what I can do. And of course, then as well, like with my campaign team, they're like, if you need to have a rest today and you can't go out leafleting, let us take care of it. And with the beauty of the internet and social media and everything like that, you can do so much in the comfort of your own home and in the comfort of your own bed. Like,
I suppose that's where I did first, not in bed. No, I didn't first become aware of you in bed, but online. So you were the zebra mom or the zebra mom?
Yeah, yeah.
And why was that your handle?
Back in the 40s, there was a doctor in the US who was a teaching doctor, and he'd say to his students, when you hear hoofbeats, think horses, not zebras. So in other words, the most obvious diagnosis is usually what it is. So basically, the zebra is the international symbol of rare diseases.
Oh,
so that's why people with EDS have kind of taken the zebra for themselves, really, you know. We all call each other zebras. We're all kind of obsessed with zebra print and, you know, really taking it to the next level. So that's where the zebra bomb came from.
But yeah, so your blogs were brilliant in terms of, you know, it's always, we talk a lot on this podcast about privilege and things that are invisible to you till they're no longer invisible, and then they are always visible.
Mm-hmm.
And things, just making me aware of how even people on the pro side of repeal, the pro-choice side, were, you know, not including enough chat about disability or asking people with disabilities to contribute, and mm-hmm. just always being aware of keeping people visible. And you really sort of taught me some lessons on that. But it was the Zebra Mom blogs and stuff that really educated me.
Oh,
there.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, they were brilliant. So social media definitely helped me to find you. And I think, so would you, I'll phrase it as a question, not a statement, would you think it's still quite a connecting thing?
Social media?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Somebody was actually asking me this morning as well about, you know, the role of social media with people with disabilities. A lot of people will use social media for entertainment, you know, looking through BuzzFeed and all these lists and quizzes and all this kind of crack, like, you know, or going on Twitter to have a fight. Whereas for people with disabilities, it's become our way of socialising. So, you know, I wouldn't be able to just on the fly go, oh, I'm going downtown for a cup of tea with a friend, like, whereas online and go into my Facebook groups and go on and, you know, Messenger or whatever and socialise that way and be able to share information and for like, where do I go for this doctor, you know. So, yeah, social media actually for a lot of people take it for granted. And it's, yeah, it's allowed me to really get it. It was kind of the thing that got me involved in lobbying and activism and everything. Yeah.
And you're really making me think, because I've said since I've deleted Twitter and Facebook, I've kind of gone, I'll see people in the real world. But it is a real world, you know, online is it is real life. I say that anyway, but it's opening my eyes to that's a luxury position to say, you know.
Yeah, it? Yeah, yeah. And I think a lot of people think like that. It's like, but I think anyone can kind of relate to it. You know, like everybody's kind of had a week where they can't get out of the house and they're in bed sick or whatever, and that's what they do then, like, to talk to people, because, you know, you kind of go stir crazy not talking to anyone. So I think a little bit, yeah, a way people would kind of relate to it on some level, but when it's like your whole life and your kind of main way of connecting with the world and getting your voice out there, I don't think people think of it like that it's such a lifeline for people like me.
Yeah, yeah. It's even, I remember being on the tube about 2 years ago, I was over doing a play in London and looking at the amount of stops with wheelchairs and going, holy crap, that's only about every five.
Yeah, it's only, I think, like a quarter of the tube stations in London, because like when we have gone over the last few times, you know, I go, I'm going to bring my chair. Is it going to be more of a hassle bringing it? And But it's the same here as well. Like, it's worse here, actually.
How is it worse here?
Oh, just like, you know what West Cork is like as well. Like, it's
amazing. Yeah, go on.
But well, it is, like, it's an amazing place to live, and I'm very privileged to live there, and I love the community spirit and everything that's down there. But just on a local level, like, buses are inaccessible.
Public transport's terrible.
Terrible. And like, our footpaths and things like that. Like, it's just, but it's saying that I was up in, what was it, the day of the march, I was up in Temple Bar, and I was cursing the place because of all the bloody cobblestone.
Yeah,
you know, so it's like, yeah, it's really frustrating in that sense. I can't remember what you asked me, Tara.
That's okay. It was basically, I mean, what I remember is that it's that West Cork is amazing, just in ways that Ireland was worse than so we're talking about London.
Yeah.
But even still London might be a bit better equipped.
Like, their taxis, or like all the black cabs are wheelchair accessible, mm-hmm. which is great. Like, even here, like, to get the train and bring your wheelchair, you have to let Irish Rail know 48 hours in advance to bring out a, wait for it, portable ramp. Like, I was there the last, yeah.
Here it comes, up the station.
Do you know, I got on the train there on Friday because I was going up to Dublin Castle for the 100 years of women's votes, you know, celebrating that. And I have really special crutches. They actually look like skis. It's everyone kind of laughs at them. But your man was like, oh, do you want me to grab the ramp? And I'm like, but I thought you had to ask 48 hours in advance. He literally just took it and plonked it. I was like, why can't you do that?
Every time.
But I think it's what my dad would say, geez, that's very Irish, isn't it?
Oh, sometimes we just, sometimes it is the only phrase that is apt. Sometimes, yeah. You know, and I think we are really trying to get better at certain things.
Yeah.
But it's people like you that are helping to raise awareness.
Well, I think, yeah, and I think that in the last few years in particular, I think people with disabilities are just like, right, lads, we've got to show them how it's done because things are taking too long.
So you think it was just you'd had enough, people with disabilities had enough, and they just went, right, it's time to...
Yeah, I think just we're waiting so long for things to change. And we were just like, right, lads, roll up the sleeves and let's get going, because I think when it's affecting... You know, there's 13% of the population live with a disability. We're not a very small minority, but obviously the majority of people, it's not in their radar. So we were just like, yeah, we're going to have to step up and do it ourselves. And I think, yeah, just the last few years, it has brought around a lot of activists, which is great.
Yeah, it is great. Yeah. And thank you for stepping up and being one of those activists. I just hope you don't turn evil.
No. Well, you're going to have to, yeah, you'll have to keep in touch and make sure I don't.
Yeah, I'll just be asking, are you evil? Evie, are you evil today? You know, putting the Evie in evil. No, taking the evil out. You see, yeah, yeah. You're going to change the whole thing. I know you are. But you're going to do it with humour. That's one of the reasons I think you're going to be so brilliant in politics, is you'll bring that humour.
Well, I hope so. I think I mean, obviously there's times where you have to be serious, and then there's other times that you kind of have to bring enjoyment and kind of different view to things.
That's kind of humanity too, isn't it?
Yeah,
that
we
all have a fun side or a funny side.
Yeah, absolutely. Just make it fun, and make it a kind of a way that people want to get involved as well, and people want to change things for the better, because you know, when we're going to be having meetings and things like that, and I want things to be very inclusive and informal. And
so I think as well that there's something in the fact that it's lovely that you're thinking of it in the way of it allows people to be comfortable enough to speak. But I also think humour can be a really creative space. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're like the way, you know, the show that you did, for example, it was educating people, but in a fun way, which reminds me, my husband is still asking for a soundtrack for your...
Oh, stop. No problem. Listen, that's, as soon as we can get it down, we'll be sending it out to everyone.
We had the song stuck in our head for weeks.
This is a song called Ride for Ireland from a show that I did. It is. It's a very hot song. It's very, very, very sexy. Now, you know what else is sexy? Science. Do you know what I saw on your Social Democrats profile? That you've studied forensic science and criminology.
I did. Yeah.
This is why I said you are evil. Or you're rather, maybe it's the opposite. Maybe you're out there catching bad guys in your spare time. Like, you've no time for rest, but you can do criminology?
Yeah, I did that after I had my son. So I was at home and my mom for as long as I can remember was pushing me to actually do law. And kind of like in retrospect now, I'm like, yeah, maybe I should have actually done law, because human rights was always something I was very passionate about from a very young age. Reading all these novels about women being sold to the Yemen and stuff like that when I was 12. You know, this really heavy
reading
stuff,
yeah,
like on my holidays. But so I was like, right, I'm at home, and my mum was like, and I couldn't get work because the recession had just hit. I actually found myself pregnant in my last semester of college. So
you like to multitask.
Well,
yeah,
I didn't do
getting
it on purpose. It was very much a surprise. I love studying. I'm very much an academic. So I was like, right. And it was a distance learning course. So, and I did that and love things like watching Law and Order SVU and all that kind of crack. Like, love it.
So are you like, at all times, we should just consider that if you're at rest, you are solving a crime in your head?
Yes. Oh. So, like watching Making a Murderer, going, no, that's not how it happened. The blood splatter is all wrong.
Who did it, Evie? Who did it on Making a Murderer? Tell us the answers now.
I don't know. This is, yeah, it's kind of hard to well, just keep, like, what, keep watching, like, Stephen Avery's new lawyer on Twitter, and just like watching everything she's saying and all the stuff that they're, all the new evidence and stuff. And I'm like, yes, that makes sense. Yeah.
And do you like, if you have to present a project for the end of your criminology exam, like, do you have to solve a crime?
luckily,
it's gone to the DPP. Yeah. And
luckily, it was all assignment based, writing assignments on blood splatter patterns and all this kind of crap. Yeah, it was very intense. And then with the criminology, like, I didn't actually enjoy the criminology side of it as much. Like, kind of like looking at profiles and who's most likely to commit a certain crime. It was the forensic stuff I found fascinating. A friend of mine now is actually a forensic archaeologist, so I'm always like, ask her like all the stuff that she's found, and it's fascinating.
So listen, people of West Cork, we have to get Evie elected so she can go into Leinster House,
which apparently isn't that accessible, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah, everyone's like, I can't wait to see your tweets about Leinster House being inaccessible.
Not only that, but I'm sure there's lots of forensic evidence that once you get your hands on, you can solve all kinds of old mysteries. I'm sorry. Why? Why is that? Why did I get the filthy laugh for that, Evie? I'm not sure what you're talking about. Anyway, I can't wait till you get in there and you can solve all the crimes. What does 2019 hold for you?
Going to be very busy with the campaign for my election, and hopefully now I get it, because I think we definitely need more women in politics, but not just that, we need more people with disabilities in politics as well. Like Cork County Council, there's, I think it's 27% of the seats are for women. So we need, it's going to be busy. Hopefully now, the more awareness of the party around West Cork comes about, that more people will jump on board and be like, yeah, cool, we'll vote for you. So far that's kind of the thing I'm focused on. Hopefully I get a holiday at some point next year.
Listen, you don't need one. You honestly are like a Wonder Woman. I don't know how you do it.
I don't know how either half the time, but I just have to do it. I'm just like, I don't want my kids to grow up in a country where they're an afterthought, and that's kind of what my driving force is. As cliche as it sounds, like,
not cliche at all. That's I wish that for you. That's a 2019 wish as well. You're just brilliant, all that you do. I hope you get a holiday.
Fingers crossed. It's been a while, all right. And I actually do much better when I'm out of the country as well, pain wise. So it's always good to get out. And like, I'm a totally different person when I'm in Spain. Like, I'm like, I don't need my painkillers. I'm fine.
The sunshine. Yeah. Oh, listen, thank you. Thank you for coming in. I can't let you go, though, without asking you
what I'm paranoid about.
What are you paranoid about?
I've got a long list.
Good.
But I think the main one is, like, my husband says to me, he was like, you hate when people look at you. I was like, or compliment you. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not really a paranoid thing. But I think what I'm most paranoid about is I keep thinking people are tick with me, like they're odd at me, and they're not like, I'm like, you odd at me. And they're like, why do you keep saying that? No, I'm fine. And people not liking me, petrified of that as well, and always thinking, oh, they don't like me. And they're like, what are you on about? They love you. But yeah, I just, in my own, maybe it's a lack of self-esteem. I don't know.
I think it's going to be tricky for you if compliments and being looked at are a problem when you're going for visibility. And surely a vote is like a very special kind
of
compliment.
Well, yeah, no, that's what I said.
You're going, oh, stop, like, don't vote. Oh, stop, don't vote for me.
No, I think that's something that he probably would have been right about a long time ago. But not so much in the last few years. I'm like, no, it's okay. I can take compliments now. Yeah. It's all right. But no, I just, people not, the whole me thinking that people are thick with me when they're not. Like, I just get very like, oh God, are you odd with me? Did I do something? They're like, no.
Oh, that is the worst feeling though. And then it's like, I'm afraid to broach it. And then if I'm wrong, they're going to go, why did you think I was? Why should I be thick with you?
Yeah. And what did you do?
What did you actually do? Were you being thick with me?
Yeah.
It goes around. Oh, that's a good paranoia. That's a very good one.
I don't know where it comes. I honestly don't know where it comes from.
But it comes from your lovely West Cork paranoid heart. And from the bottom of my borders of West Cork, paranoid heart.
I can say as well. It is.
Well, no, it's Gateway maybe, at best. It's on the Wild Atlantic Way, but I think that's a stretch. But we are, it's definitely the Atlantic. It's not super west. But look, we are all one at the end of the day.
That's right.
And that we're from Cork, which means we're the best. I'm sorry, I just had to say it.
Up the rebels.
Up the rebels. Thank you. I'm glad you have a little red pop shield on your mic.
Actually, it was red on my, on when we used to do the podcast down below in Clan as well. Mine was the red one as well.
So, can people check out your podcast still?
The episodes have been taken down. I don't know why, but there's one archive episode.
They're too evil.
There's one archive episode that like we look back on past episodes. So it's the Baz and Bob's Late Late Breakfast. You'll find it on iTunes. By Late Late Breakfast, it was on 7 p.m. on a Saturday night.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, it's a podcast for the dangerously hungover.
Oh, yeah. Now you heard
it was,
you
first. Yeah, messing. Like, I wasn't actually ever supposed to be on it, but I was kind of going on it for research. But then myself and one of the lads had a good bit of banter, like, and don't arguing with each other and stuff like that. So it kind of made great radio.
When you've had your holiday and when you've been elected, maybe you'll get back to the podcast.
Oh yeah, I'd love to. Yeah.
But meanwhile, thank you for coming into
our
paranoid house. Thank you for coming in. Round of applause at home, please, everybody. For Evie Nevins, thank you. Thank you, fellow Egypts. See you soon. Thank you, Evie.
Thank you.
Guns lights. Okay.
This has been a production of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.